Everybody knows that Dr. Martin Luther King and his wife Coretta did not have the best marriage. But Coretta said one time, "The last 6 months of our marriage were the best. You know why? Because we knew that he was going to die. We could feel it coming. We got those hate phone calls, we got the death threats, and we knew that he was going to die soon. So in those last 6 months, we knew that it was short, and we made the best of our marriage." Jesus also knew that he was going to be killed. Not because he was God and knew the future. He didn't know the future any more than we do. But like Dr. King, he received death threats, and there were some attempts on his life. And like Dr. King, he empowered the oppressed, and he challenged the powerful. So he empowered women and prostitutes and foreigners and people with disabilities. And you know, when you empower people like that, you confront their oppressors, and that means trouble for you. And so Jesus knew it. And so he said to the people, his disciples, "They're going to hand me over to the Romans, and they're going to kill me. But 3 days later, I will rise." Well, this is so disappointing and hurtful to the disciples. They wanted Jesus to get rid of the Romans. And here Jesus was saying, "The Romans are going to get rid of me." So how did they handle it when he said I was going to die? How did they handle it? It was pretty disheartening how they handled the news. They were so devastated by his news that they were afraid to ask any questions. They were afraid. I would be too. To hear your best friend say, "They're going to kill me soon." They were afraid. And so they changed the topic. They started talking about who's the greatest. You might remember I told the story about my brother Jerry. His mother-in-law lived in Cleveland, and she got cancer, and he went out to see her many, many times. And then there came a time where he knew that she was going to die. So he decided that he would have to say goodbye to his mother-in-law. So he waited and waited because the mother-in-law had a sister who kept sitting in the chair next to the bed. And Jerry kept waiting and waiting for her to go, but she didn't go. So finally he goes in the bedroom and he says, "Mom, I just want to say I got to go back to Rochester and I'm not going to see you again. And I just want to tell you how much I love you and I'm going to miss you. And you're just like my own mother. I love you to pieces." And right after that, the sister sitting in the chair says, "Helene, would you like some more hot chocolate?" She was too afraid to talk about death. So she changed the topic. Well, I had my own experience like that. About 10 years ago, a very good friend of mine died. Very suddenly, she was 56 years old. And as I was getting the news on the phone, I was so devastated. I was so devastated that my friend had died. And what crossed my mind was, I wonder if she left me any money. She didn't leave me any money. But analyzing that, I said, I can't believe I said it. I was so ashamed that I said that. But it was a terrible attempt to ease my pain because I was in so much pain that I wanted to change the topic. So that's what the disciples were doing too. They were in pain. Jesus just said he's going to die. And they started arguing about who's the greatest. So Jesus always addresses the elephant in the room. "So what were you guys talking about on the way?" They remained silent. Well, of course, they're too embarrassed to talk about it, as I was embarrassed. They're afraid. I wonder if many people in England would be embarrassed to admit that they voted for Brexit because they're afraid of immigrants coming from Syria and Africa. I wonder if people in our government here would be embarrassed to admit that this year is the lowest level of immigrant intake ever in the last few years because they're afraid of Muslims and people of color coming into our country. So the disciples were embarrassed. They were afraid, so they stayed silent. So Jesus decides to make this a teachable moment, to make a corrective lesson, because here he's talking about his suffering and death. They're talking about who's the greatest. So he sat down. Now that's always a sign. A rabbi always sits when he taught a lesson. So now he's sitting and he's ready for the lesson. Here's the lesson. If you want to be important You have to be last, and you have to be a servant of all. It's okay to be important. It's okay if you want to be great, but I'm just saying, you have to be last, and you have to become a servant if you want to be great. The important people are not the emperors, they're not the generals, they're not Wall Street billionaires. You know who the important people are? Mothers and fathers. Maintenance people. The important people are nursing home aides, hotel maids, farm workers, car mechanics. From God's perspective, the great people in the world are the least important, and the least important are the greatest. So Jesus rebukes them for thinking that greatness is based on status and recognition. Rather, greatness is about sacrifice, service, and hard work. I had my own experience about that. I've told you this. When I became a pastor, I was 29 years old at Corpus Christi, and I was kind of full of myself and thinking, isn't this great? I'm 29, I'm the pastor. And so at the stroke of midnight, I became the pastor. So I waited up and waited up. And about 1 minute after midnight, the phone rings. I go, great, that's probably Charlie from West Virginia congratulating me. I said, no, maybe it's Bill from Chicago. I bet that's who it is. He's congratulating me. Instead, it was, this is Highland Hospital. Somebody is dying. Hurry over because we need you. What a lesson. Being a pastor is not about honor and prestige and recognition. It's about service. Get to work. Robert Frost said those famous words, by faithfully working 8 hours a day, you may eventually become the boss, and then work 12 hours a day. Our culture is obsessed with upward climbing, upward mobility, status. Thomas Merton said, people may spend their whole lives climbing the ladder of success, only to find that at the top, the ladder is leaning against the wrong wall. Many people have had that experience. Whoever wants to be first must become the servant. Today, this applies to privilege. We hear a lot about privilege, male privilege, white privilege. So if we are white, how do we use our white privilege to serve people who don't have it? Namely, people of color. If we are male, how do we use our male privilege to serve people who don't have it? Namely, women. We see this being played out today in the case of Dr. Christine Ford's accusation against Judge Brett Kavanaugh. Some male senators want to hold on to their male privilege and ram the nomination right through. Other men want to learn from past male privilege mistakes and understand how difficult and courageous it is for women to break the silence about sexual misconduct and therefore allow time for adequate investigation. Time magazine says, how the Kavanaugh drama plays out could be the ultimate test of today's struggle for political and cultural power. Jesus asks, how do I become a servant in those places where I hold privilege? How do I sacrifice my own self-interest for the greater good, for the common good? So to illustrate this point, and probably he wasn't getting through very well with his disciples, so he takes a kid, he takes a little child, and he affectionately places his arms around the child. Now the child represents all the little people, all the people with no rights, the people with no status, nobody to defend them, all the vulnerable people in the world. Think of all the vulnerable children right now. The vulnerable immigrant children still suffering from the ongoing separation from their parents. Think of the vulnerable children that clergy have abused over the years. Think of the vulnerable children in Rochester, where one out of every two African American children live in poverty. One out of every two African American kids live below the poverty level. Think of the vulnerable children in our schools, because we continue to favor gun rights over school safety. Think of the vulnerable children who return every day from a long day at school, and instead of emotionally engaging with them, the parents are talking on their cell phones. Jesus tells us emphatically, whoever loves a child like this loves me. How you treat a child is how you treat me. how are we treating our children? So loving a child is the greatest thing you could do in the world. Joel and Megan, loving a child is the best thing you could do. What lucky kids you have. It's the greatest thing we could do is love a child. Or loving anybody of little status. That's doing the great thing in the world. Spiritus Christi Religious Ed begins next week. The classes start next Sunday. Some of you are teachers, some of you are students. You know, without our children, we would never know how much we are capable of loving another human being. Isn't that what you parents have learned from your kids? You had no idea how much you could love until you had a child. And that child brought out that immense love. And the best thing we can do for our children is to let them know that God loves them and that all of us love them, not just in our words, but also in our deeds. The more people are loved, the less they need to compete for attention, the less they need to use violence to make their importance felt. If they're loved, they don't have to use violence to make their importance felt. Jesus knew that loving was more powerful than violence. He knew that even though violence was going to be used against him, it would not overcome him. Jesus knew he was going to die, just like Martin Luther King. And Jesus predicted it three times. Three times he said, "I'm going to be killed." But he never predicted his death without also saying, "But 3 days later, I'm going to rise." Resurrection. So Jesus lived as though death did not matter. He shows us that resurrection is the victory for two kinds of people. For all the vulnerable people like children, and for all those who serve them. And that's what greatness is all about.